we're on the section, and now about we're doing the visualization in the long text. We're starting out with an extraordinary mandala visualization. And before we enter into that, and before I read that, I really would like to go through key points about the nature of visualization and the nature of why we practice visualization and how to practice it, because it's especially such a complex mandala is very bewildering and I would say daunting to many people. So I would like to give some key points about this today. So that's exactly where we are. I think it's page 11. Okay, page 6A, page 13 in the longer, in the bigger format text, page 6A in the small fonts. I'm only using that shorter text because that's where my original notes, that's the original text I received from Alter and Brochet. But it's the one I've used, so more familiar with it, and it's also got personal notes and so on in it, so that helps instead of retranscribing them all. But it starts off with Hung Hri. And this is very important. Hung Hri, you'll say, you might be asking yourself, what's, as in many texts, you'll see clearly, it tells you what the seed syllable is. Well, here you have two. And there's a good reason for this. Why two? Really, the seed syllable is Hri. But you see, Guru Rinpoche is in union with his consort. It's a Yab-Yum. So it's not just one seed syllable, it's actually two. The Hong is Guru Rinpoche, the Hri is the Dakini, Hong Hri. Remember, the union of Guru. I see, I've got a message here. The page number is blipped out. Page 6A on the smaller font text, the one that everyone has sent, and page 13 of the one with the bigger font. So it starts out with with these two seed syllables, Hung Hri. And you'll notice that Guru Rinpoche has a Katvanga staff. The Katvanga staff is not just male. It also says it's in union with the central channel, the wisdom channel, which is the wisdom consort of primordial awareness, the womb of universal totality. That's what it represents. If it's a female Yidam, like Vajragini, she will also have a trident staff in the crook of her arm, and that's representing her consort, which is the male skill and means consort. So they're always an inseparable union, even if there's one seed syllable, there's actually two. That's not to confuse you. That's just to say that all the Yidams, peaceful, Yab-Yum, it doesn't matter. They're all in union, skill and means. Or compassion and primordial wisdom. But before we get deeply into this text, and I'll go back and forth with it to some degree, and then I'll just read through it. We may take 2 days on this, we'll see, but I want to spend quite a bit of time on this because it can't be skipped over. I have a long list, a full page here, of things, topics I'd like to cover about generation completion and why visualization. So the first one is to do with, I think many of you know who've been in retreat or sufficiently long retreat and have done enough deep work, is you'll notice that when you think, or when we have discursive thinking, and not just in fantasy, we're often visualizing something. So not only do we verbalize internally, but we visualize things all the time. They're very quick, and they're not what I would call fantasy, full-blown fantasy. They are, in fact, little visions of what we're cogitating or worrying about or thinking about or reflecting about. And they are like ephemeral visualizations. But you have to remember that when we visualize and use our speech, we're also engaging parts of the brain that I'm getting some messages here about. I think we've got some difficulties with bandwidth and difficulties with signals here. I'm just going to continue on. I'll let Ludo try to figure this out if he can. But I'll continue on. It's also being recorded and have so much to do that we better not to wait. So
if you cut off the video, at least the audio will come through
clearly. Okay, maybe we can do that. Cut off the video for a while. I'm going to disappear into Shunyata, which is exactly what it is anyways. So we can practice generation and completion stage right here on the video by turning the signal off and seeing if you can just hear me. What a wonderful opportunity. Let's see if that works any better. We can maybe have some feedback.
Yeah, if it's working well and you can hear well, can you put a message in the chat, please? I'm going to talk just for a test, so to make sure, yes, better. Okay, so we'll keep on without the video then.
Do you know how complicated this is going to get when half of us are on Mars or Jupiter or, in our holiday palace circling the Earth? Just think, we're just getting used to how we're going to do all that. So here we go. So, Adam, if you really look instead of ignoring your thoughts and quieting your thoughts, if you really look at them very clearly, you're going to see that there's visualizations, microscopic visualizations happening all the time when you're thinking. They've just muted all participants. You can stand over here there, Ludo. When there's an arm in front of mine. If everybody could turn off their video, that would be great. Then we can just carry on. We're trying, so you have to remember what we're trying to do here is build stronger muscles, not just a visualization. We're trying to build stronger bodhicitta muscles. And the only way to do that is we're going to have to take a very strong medicine there's all kinds of weird stuff happening here. We're going to have to interfere with the normal chain of habit patterns to affect a mind that is moving towards relative and ultimate bodhicitta. And we're not talking about compassion here. We're talking about the unity of boundless compassion and emptiness. Those two. That is bodhicitta. So that's what we're heading for. And to do that, we actually have to interfere with what most people don't know, which is microscopic visualization, microscopic murmuring to themselves, and get at that causal link, which is happening 20, 30, 40,000 times a day. So in order to do that, we need a very strong medicine. And that is one of the great reasons why these deity yoga practice generation stage is so powerful. So when we look at the word Buddha, in Sanskrit it primarily means to wake up, be completely awake. But in Tibetan, Sangye means purity. So one of the ways in which you can feel if visualization's working is the experience of utter purity, Vajrasattva. But that purity can come through in any meditational deity. It doesn't matter what you're doing. It could be refuge tree, it could be mandal offering, it could be a Guru Rinpoche, it doesn't matter, Vajragini, that or Tara. That purity, utter, complete, boundless purity, it's not just about ethics, it's mind purity. And to do that, we have to change the course of these 20, 30, 40,000 moments of causal discursive thinking, which is habit pattern. So we insert a form of ultimate bodhicitta and relative bodhicitta into our body, speech, and mind. This is essential. So the Adam is a radiant form of enlightened nature that we already have in our mind stream, but it's going to take a very long time to purify for that Yidam to come through. So we're going to affect the causal conditions to make it happen this lifetime. And if it doesn't happen this lifetime, we do enough purification, it's going to happen after death in the Sambhogakaya. Okay, so this is the fast way to free up. So the next point I'd like to say, which many of you've heard before, is the amount of clinging around the body appearance is huge. It's not minor. Whether you're males or females, young or old, the appearance of the body is extremely firm and fixed. But what so many people don't know, and so many even Dharma practitioners keep forgetting, unless they soak themselves in this day and night, is that we never, ever experience our bodies. We experience an appearance in the mind of something. This is absolutely fundamental. We can't come to the impure illusory body, let alone the pure illusory body experience and what's called Deva pride, until we cut through the massive amounts of clinging and stickiness to an imaginary body, to an imaginary vision of our body and other people's bodies that is simply an imputation, an appearance of mind stream built up of relative cause and conditions. And we now know from research that the mapping of a human body in the nervous system, mapping, not reality, mapping, to the square millimeter starts in the womb. So by the time we're in our preteens and teens, we have a very detailed map of our body and feelings and sensations around our body, which is an appearance body. It's completely an illusory figment of our imagination. It is not actually how it is. So this causes tremendous suffering, and it causes a lot of panic. It causes a lot of anxiety. It causes a lot of stress, and it's worth economically, I'm sure, $2 or $3 billion to our economies to make sure that people are dealing with their appearances all the time, if you know what I mean. Whether it's the cosmetic industry, whether it's clothing, whether it's movies or fashion, it's worth a huge part of our economy to be concerned about what our bodies look like, how they appear and how they smell, and so on. So to come to an inner body of experience, the inner cathedral, the inner temple, the inner mandala of bodhicitta, we are going to have to use very strong medicine, and not just samatha. We can't use samatha for this. We need to use really strong means, skill means, tantra, to affect a way of bringing out the real, the actual tantra, the continuum body of compassion and wisdom. So that is why we do that. So if one doesn't know this, then we're going to meditate in our conditioned body and our conditioned experience, our conditioned speech, and our conditioned mind. And yes, we'll have some meditation experiences, but we're not actually heading for Buddhahood. We're heading for an emotional release or some emotional freedom, by the way, which is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's just not what the Dharma is on about. So that's okay. Next one is called Buddha pride, or deity pride. It's very important. We all have, almost all of us, even if we have bad pride, even if we put ourselves down all day long and allow other people to put us down, we still have pride. Pride's huge. So through prostration, one of the major means and one of the reasons for prostration is to decrease the pride. So when we actually are practicing as the Yidam, as the deity, the meditational deity, we're actually going for Buddha pride, which is the experience of such an amazing set of qualities dwelling in our being, where there's not us looking at that. It's a real experience of having all these qualities, a luminous body, all the qualities of Guru Rinpoche, suddenly manifesting for real in our being, even for a fraction of a second. And the pride is not a conceited pride. The pride is a pride of bodhicitta. I can be a bodhisattva. I can effectively help and be with all sentient beings for their welfare and their liberation. And that is that's actually humility, not pride. So if anybody's getting pride out of becoming a Yidam or becoming the refuge tree, then there's something not right. It should be, in fact, mind-blowing humility is what it should be in the face of what power and majesty every one of us have. So this is why we have a mandala of 11 figures, 10 directions plus 10 figures plus one in the center, which is a powerful mandala of awakened pride. And therefore, it's really important to get to know each figure. Not even if you can't visualize each figure clearly, just lay them out in a grid, lay them out on a piece of paper in 10 directions, and write the qualities, write the each aspect of it in there, the color, the hands, what the hands are doing, and get a feeling for each one. So you create a feeling map of the qualities that you have and Guru Rinpoche has, and actually all beings can come to. So this is the heroic mandala, powerful, wise, full of every good quality of enlightened compassion. And we have to remember how we grow. As children, we grow by mimicking. If we are surrounded by people who are unwholesome, we will often mimic unwholesome beings. If we're surrounded by good beings, we often mimic good beings. If we're surrounded by enlightened beings, we mimic enlightened beings' qualities. So too, if you want to learn a sport, every once in a while, we have to stop practicing. We need to actually, I hope you all know this, the secret is, we need to look very carefully and feel how someone who's much better at that sport or that musical instrument or that dance or performance or whatever it is, singing or anything else, and feel it in our being. Not just see it, feel it. And one of the ways which we do that is we see it in our being. So this map is like taking graph paper or taking line paper and making 10 lines in the graph is a center line, up and down, a central point. So you have above and below, and then you have 8 directions going out. It's actually 360 degree map, but it's the way it's expressed in Tantra and in Indian tradition is 10 points. 10 points takes care of everything. It takes care of the entire sphere of experience. So draw it out in the center on a sun disk is standing Guru Rinpoche, Kalden Drenze, hand symbols, color, the robes, everything else, and draw them out. Or if not draw them out, actually make a list, because some of us are not very good drawers. Just make a list. And then you have above is Vajradhara, and you can put those characteristics, a little sphere with those characteristics. Below is another, well, that comes at the end, actually. That's another figure, yellow figure. But then we actually create the mandala. So in the front, the spoke in front, is this blue medicine Buddha, Guru Rinpoche, medicine Buddha figure. And then to our, if we're in the center of the mandala, to our right is another figure, actually Ratnasambhava, Guru Rinpoche is Ratnasambhava, a jewel-like being. So we create these figures, and we actually list the figures in the mandala. And I recommend doing that. That's what I did when I did this as a retreat. This particular practice, I created a chart and sketched out these figures so that it wasn't just reading them out loud, which is also very helpful, but actually trying to feel who these figures are and what their qualities are. So mimicry is very important, that we take on the best qualities of others, whether they're scientists, whether they're our best mother, whether they're wonderful qualities of our girlfriend or a boyfriend or our spouse, whether they're our teachers. We want to go for the best qualities and mimic and feel what those qualities are and incorporate them into our mandala of experience. This is how it works. And when we do that, we will find that one day we have an experience of spontaneous, natural presence. Not because we've, not just because we have mimicked and we're pretending, but one day, and many of you reported to me this has happened to you, you go, oh my goodness, how did that happen? I experienced the following. Like, where did it come from? It's called practice. So it only took 3 weeks. It only took 3 hours to generate the first vaccine from the RNA code that was published by the Chinese on the internet. But it took 21 years of scientific research to get to 3 hours. Is everybody getting that? I hope. It wasn't magical. It took 3 hours to make the first vaccine, which is still being tested. They don't even know if it's going to work. But it's experimental. But it took 21 years of research. It's okay. 21 years of research to actually pull that off. So we have to have patience. It's not going to necessarily take us 21 years to have the visualizations. It's going to take a lot shorter than that, by the way. That's what's wonderful. It's already in us. So the text is actually telling us how to do this. We have to really read the text carefully to realize how we're going to have a vision and how we're going to come to integrate the vision of Orgyen Nyudon Dorje, of Guru Rinpoche's treasure teaching, into our experience. So it's spontaneous, it's natural, it's a spontaneous, natural arising. And this is the feeling of why we're practicing visualization. We want it to happen like suddenly we dance, a beautiful dance. Suddenly we sing like we've never sung before. Suddenly we utter mantras like we've never uttered mantras before. Suddenly we don't even know we're walking somewhere. We sit down and, oh my goodness, there's the appearance of Guru Rinpoche before us, or even our being turns into it. So we have to get out of the way for that to happen. The real experience of Yidam is not flat. It's luminous. And it must be, so the experience happens, not you seeing the Yidam, but one is the Yidam, but everything appears visually or by sound as if you were seeing things in a mirror or on the surface of a lake or in a lake. If it's flat, it means it's not there. It's really got to be open, luminous space to get to the empty quality of the Yidam. That's important. So you're looking. That's often why In the tantric texts and the practice texts, the manuals of, let's say, the six dharmas of Naropa, it says take a mirror and place the mirror in such a way that you can see the picture of the Yidam in the mirror and meditate on that. Close your eyes, see the image, let go over and over and over again, loosely. Letting the vision appear as if you were seeing your face or seeing something in a mirror or a lake. That's actually how it's done. So take a mirror and look at the reflection of the image and do it many, many times over. As Guru Rinpoche said in a treasure teaching, have many, many sessions, many, many sessions in the day, short sessions of visualization. And not at night to begin with, but during the day, using a mirror and letting it come to you and relaxing and making them short sessions and stop struggling so much trying to visualize perfectly at once. Just let it come to you, let it come to you, let it come to you. Close your eyes and feel and see the Adam in you, of you, out there in you, and so on. So this is a very beautiful instruction that he gave, and it really works very, very well. So one of our problems with visualization is we're struggling too hard. We're not relaxed. If you can visualize your faucet in your bathroom right now, if you can suddenly visualize your pillow, if you can visualize what your sock looks like or your cover of your bed, then you know you have no difficulty with visualizing Yidam. It's just resistance, and resistance is futile. Okay. Okay. So what we're doing here is we're putting on clothing. We're putting on the adornments of liberation of a Sambhogakaya being. We're just like we're getting dressed in the morning, just like we're putting on makeup and jewelry, and we're putting a hat on, we're putting gloves, and we're putting shoes on, and all these kinds of things. We're doing exactly the same thing. So it would be good if you had all the clothing of Guru Rinpoche, the lotus hat and everything, and you can actually put them on when you sit down to practice. And by the way, that was a tantric practice. You put on the bone ornaments and everything else of a tantric practitioner, and you sat with the clothing of it. So getting real about it, really, really clear. Third point. Is the 10 directions is an outer and inner map. We have an internal map that is a conditioned habit map of an imaginary conditioned body, speech, and mind from even before we were born. That conditions everything we see or do. So here we are, we're creating a new map, which is a cathedral of light, a temple of light, which is the Sambhogakaya mandala that is experienced in profound vision of liberation. So we not only visualize it outside ourselves because we see things outside ourselves, but we also visualize it inside ourselves. And 10 directions, as I said before, means we fill each space. And 10 directions is code for what is found in the sutras and tantras, which is the reference to as full as a, they say sesame seeds, but like a poppy. I'll give you an example. Like a poppy, if you all know what a poppy's like, full of seeds, that is the expression that's used that like that, except they use sesame seeds in a pod. But let's use poppy seeds. There's no space in there. So the space of bodhicitta and the awakeness fills all of space. And that's really what the 10 points refers to. So we want to fill every bit of imaginary, illusory, awake space with awakened beings. That's really, if you can practice that way. And that's why it says retinues and secondary retinues and tertiary retinues, infinite retinues in the text, because the meaning behind that is infinite space of an array of an awakened beings. And that's the way it actually is. And when people keep asking me about the practice of luminosity, what luminosity means, that's luminosity. Luminosity means you experience everything as awake space, both of appearances and no appearance, of awakeness. So that is why we need eventually, as the practices like Three Roots and other practice texts, not so much in this Kalden Drenze text, but in many texts, we practice the full mandala in each of the different chakras, in the crown, the forehead, the throat, the heart, the navel, or the transformation center, the genitals, or the secret center. We practice all the way until our body becomes a full mandala of physiological mental experience unified as a Sambhogakaya being. And you will see this will happen. And where it will probably first appear is in dreams. So if it's beginning to come through in dreams, congratulations. If it comes through in dreams, it'll probably come through in the Sambhogakaya. But of course, we would like it to happen spontaneously, effortlessly, and clearly we have to try to do this. We need the causal conditions. But when it appears spontaneously and clearly, it will shock you out of your seat. So how to practice. If we go into the instruction manuals on Deity Yoga, they're found especially in the six dhammas of Naropa. We will see that the first step that we do when we practice Yadam practice or generation stage, which is we have to practice for Dumo, for inner heat, which is the foundation of all the six dharmas of Naropa, such as illusory body and the clear light and so on, luminosity and bardo and so on. If we do that, the first step, the number one step, is hollow body practice. Why do people keep forgetting this? I don't know. It's number one. If you want to move into a new house or apartment, don't move into an apartment or house that someone has left all their things there for 30 years. Okay? You want to move into a hollow, a clean, a sparklingly clean, open environment where you can put new things in, where the space is there for the arising of manifestations of bodhicitta. So let's read the lines on page 6a or page 13, depending on which text you have. In the space before me, Hong Hri, in the space before me, the ultimate and unborn space of absolute reality, the Dharmakaya, unborn space, total potential. In an expanse of ceaseless clouds of five-colored rainbow light, the primordial lights of the wisdom Buddhas, rays of light drift and flow into all directions without coming to rest anywhere. They can't rest anywhere. There's no place. Places don't exist. They're made up in the mind. There's no earth. There's only earth in our minds. When we think of planet Earth, we are really remembering a photograph, usually that the Apollo astronauts took from the moon. When we look at planet Earth, where if you just try visualizing planet Earth right now, the chances are you're going to visualize either the photograph the Apollo astronauts took, or you're going to visualize a map or a globe that someone's made, thinking that you're visualizing planet Earth. Are you getting the idea? I hope so. You can all say, yes, we get the idea. So we don't have a real Earth. There's no place that we can stand. That's called Lokuttara. There's no place that we can arrive to except the unborn, uncreated. And from that space arises through requests, only through requests, the rays of compassion, the rays of light of Sambhogakaya and Nirmanakaya manifestations that bring liberation to beings. But we have to request it. They don't come. It's like we have to request a teacher to come and teach. They don't show up. They'll just stay in retreat. We have to make that request. We don't make that request, they don't come. We may have to make that request a lot. We may have to write them letters. We may have to send emails. But it's not just that they're saying no, they want to see that the request is a genuine heartfelt prayer for liberation, not to fill time. And also for beings residing in Sambhogakaya, if they actually do reside in Sambhogakaya, it's such a meaning of a word or term, but they only respond to heartfelt, genuine requests for teachings and liberation. So this is what's meant here. And in the middle of that palace of five colored rainbow light, a primordial light, is a lotus, a solar disk, the self-originated, spontaneously originated, precious Lord of Uddiyana, Padmasambhava, in majestic standing posture. So that's how it is. So they're reminding you here, when it says Hung Hri, that is the third samadhi. Remember the samadhis from last class? That's the third samadhi of the seed syllable, or the causal samadhi. And then in the space before me, the ultimate unborn space of absolute reality, is the first samadhi, is the Dharmakaya samadhi. And then the rising of Guru Rinpoche and the Sambhogakaya lights of primordial wisdom is the second samadhi. So these samadhis are all the way through. These are wisdom samadhis. So the way in which we come to the Sambhogakaya experiences is through what's called familiarization. We familiarize ourselves with the mandala. We familiarize ourselves with the sounds of the Adam. We familiarize ourselves with feeling what it's like to be that Yidam, feeling what it's like to be clothed in that clothing and that jewelry and that light and that radiance, what it's like to have the mandala appear in our heart. Try that, it's beautiful. Or in our brains, in our skull, because remember, it's hollow body. So we don't have brains inside there. We have the space of light. Inside our heart, there's no beating heart. It's not solid, never is solid anyways. Just imaginary solid. It is a space. There's an open space. There's a cave in there, and in that cave is this beautiful mandala that appears. And when we do that, we'll see one day too that we can't tell the difference between the outer and the inner. All of space is the inner, and all of the outer is the inner. So when we practice hollow body, we want to practice a body that is utterly spacious, but the skin is like a tent. We sit in a ten point tent of light, and the skin is just like a tent fabric. It's like a clear nylon or a cotton fabric, sheer. You can almost see through it, and inside there's no organs, there's no spine, there's nothing in there except the light of radiance. And out of that appears the channels, the winds, the drops, the mandalas, the dakinis, the dakas dancing, the sounds of celestial music, and so on. So we really need to practice hollow body. And as Namjoo Rinpoche once said many years ago in a talk, I remember at the Dharma Center, he said, why don't you take a week, take 2 weeks and practice hollow body until you get it. And I went, yeah, I will. So yes, for 8 days, went into retreat in Galaxy Cabin, the Dharma Center. And that was a marvelous time. I must say I made some discoveries there that have stead me in good stead for the rest of my life. So a hollow body, there's a reason why the first instruction of Dumo is hollow body. And out of hollow body, you can really practice deity yoga, and the Dumo will go very, very well. The strength of the hollow body practice of being infinite in size and small as a mustard seed and being utterly hollow and in the body of the Adam is a great, great practice. Really, really excellent. So the next one I'd like to say is never think that visualization is a mental operation. visualization is a physical operation as well. We never do anything visually that isn't physical. Every time we visualize, we secrete neuroendocrine substances, oxytocin. If we see something beautiful or something we like, it's very complex. It is now known there's hundreds of neurochemicals, actually thousands. And that's not even to mention the neurological immunochemical system. So don't think of the brain as just an electrical thing. It's a wet electrical brain of substances. So every time we think or see or hear, just think about singing. Think about a beautiful singer, maybe Michael Gohl or someone else, or Ludo chanting, and you're going, oh my God, that feels so good. Well, what do you think? That's physical. And so it only takes a fraction of a second for these neurohormones to be spread throughout our body, go into our blood, and we put our hands over our chest, and we go, oh my God, that singing. Handel's Messiah, beautiful Jewish Hasidic singing, or chanting, Gregorian chant, or a chant master in a Tibetan monastery. I'm like, God, so beautiful. Well, every sense becomes a deva sense. Every sense becomes a luminous sense when we enact these things. And it, as Namjoon Poche would say, it leads to transcendental. Through the senses, through the lighting up of the senses, the radiance of the senses, it purifies our gross, impure experience. And the objects of experience, the sense stores of experience, and the inner cognition, 18 of them, okay? 6 times 3 in Abhidhamma. That change that's done through sadhana brings about extraordinary experiences of pure appearance. So never, ever feel that when we're visualizing, we're doing a mentalist thing. That means that if we're doing ordinary visualizations, and we're always in our habit patterns of visualization, then that's exactly what we're going to get. Remember, causality. If we hope for regular things, we get regular things. If we hope for extraordinary things that are causally real, then we get extraordinary things. Why do we practice sadhana? Because it brings extraordinary results. If we meditate on our own body, our own speech, and our own mind, guess what we get? I can't hear you. What do we get? We get what? Ordinary body, ordinary speech, and occasionally we get these experiences coming in of calm. And that's nice, but that's what we have. We're dealing with our conditioned awareness. So the entire text of a sadhana is the Buddha activity of a high bodhisattva, or even a low bodhisattva is good, Buddha activity. And training in that. So you want to feel the visualization. You want to feel the mantra. You want to feel a different kind of cognition, purity. And from that will come the space that allows the visions to arise spontaneously. So first of all, we train, and then eventually we get shocked because we start to see these togyal visions, or these chains of light, or these bindus, or these things. And if they're genuine and real, they will physiologically and cognitively change us. Now, I'd like to also talk about not visualizing clearly. People get very worried. I can't see anything. Well, I've known people who can see and visualize very clearly that don't go anywhere, really, particularly. Their heart's not into it. They're not feeling it. So, again, to quote Namjoon Rinpoche, what a beautiful state once, he says, you know, it's okay to have a vision of something. That's okay. It's good. But when you have a vision and you hear, and there's sound, speech, and you have body sensation and body witness, I remember him saying, now we're talking. Now we're getting real. So, even if you can't visualize clearly, and by the way, there's been great Tibetan masters who've said they haven't been able to visualize clearly. Some do, some don't, some are very good at it, some are naturals, some take a long time. It all depends on how much time you have. And also depends on, some people are very natural at it. But Do you feel it? And I really believe, not just because I'm believing it, obviously, but when your heart is into it, even if you don't see it clearly, you really feel the qualities come through. And this is devotion. This is faith. This is confidence. So when you have faith, which maybe is the problem with a lot of people having today, is they want to meditate and practice, but they're not practicing with a heart of faith and confidence about what they're doing. The big picture's not there. But when the big picture's there, even when you're not seeing the vision clearly, you have a heart for it. And I believe this is really essential. So as Guru Rinpoche said in a term, stop trying so hard. Relax. Go paint. Go take many sessions during the day. Go for a walk and visualize. Stop and visualize. Lay down and visualize. Relax and let it come to you. And be much more gentle about it. And then eventually the concentration will come and you can naturally hold that feeling of Guru Rinpoche or being medicine Buddha Guru Rinpoche or a Vajra Dakini or the white Dakini, the red Dakini, yellow Dakini. And you can actually hold it without holding it. You have to discover what that's like. So one day it will dawn. So the other thing that I caution you on is it's a complicated mandala. So don't blow your brains out. Start with a central figure, become the central figure, look around, see other figures, try, look, see the mandala in space appearing. But don't struggle with saying, oh, I can't do this. My gosh, there's 11 figures in the mandala with all their ornaments and hand implements and all this kind of thing. I could never do that. Well, that's just panic. That's just anxiety and panic. You're going to run for the hills. But actually, if you're just loose about it, place the colors in, place the hand ornaments, draw a map, paint it out, draw it out, whatever it is. Dance it out, put pillows out, I don't know, whatever you want to do. Put colors on the windows, I don't know. Do something. But enact it. But it will come if you actually play with it and get playful and not stiff and driving yourself nuts. So as soon as you panic, you lose it all. And so build it up slowly. Allow it to be built up slowly. Try for everything you do, try just visualizing a dorje. Take a dorje before you hold it in your hand, a dorje of Vajra, and close your eyes and bring it in. Feel it in your hand when it says that Guru Rinpoche on the next page on 6B, at page 15 in the bigger font text, it says his right hand is the gesture of granting protection. It holds a Vajra scepter. Well, do that. Just stand there or sit there, but stand also and put your hand in the same gesture as in the picture of Guru Rinpoche and place it out. And the other hand is holding a skull cup to the transformation center with a ambrosial nectar or a sea of ambrosial nectar. And out of that is coming, or even Rakta you can have, and out of that is coming a long life Oz. And stand there in majestic pose, eyes open, gazing at all sentient beings with smiles and love, and bringing them fearlessness and no anxiety, bringing them unconditioned love and compassion coming from primordial wisdom. And just try it out. It might only last a second, but you might go, whoa, that's really cool. Do it 100 times, might just flow. If you don't have a skull cup, use your bell. If you don't have a bell, use a bowl. If you don't have a bowl, I don't know. Visualize it, feel it. Go use your womb, right? Guys too, you got wombs, they're invisible. Or some of you have real wombs, but you know, this is it. I think that's all the points I wanted to make. Probably I've got something like 50 more, but I think that's plenty today. Don't get turned off from texts that say now visualize every hair of the eyebrow of the Adam. actually that will come when you can do that. You'll see eventually in retreat, you'll go, wow, I can actually do this. But for now, be easy on yourself, and better to actually feel the qualities than it is to have this perfect vision without the actual feel of the Adam. The Adam should come to you, and it should feel like it's majestic, and it should feel like it's got incredibly powerful qualities of blessing and majesty. And that's prayer. So if you separate that out from prayer, that's too bad. That is prayer. Visualization is prayer. Sound is prayer. Posture is prayer. Mudra is prayer. Everything we do is prayer. And we're trying to dissolve the physiological constraints of our cognition into a vat, if you wish, the skull cup of primordial wisdom, you know, boiling samsara, the rakta. When you make the inner offering, the rakta is a skull cup of infinite dimensions of boiling a blood of vitality, which is really the vitality of primordial wisdom. The womb of infinite dimensions, the womb of Vajragini, of Guru Rinpoche's consort, Sogyal, the ocean of great bliss. Of wisdom bliss. So you may have some questions, but I can't hear you. I'm just going to read the visualization through, and then we'll go through to the abbreviated meditation of Guru Rinpoche as Medicine Buddha, or Medicine Buddha as Guru Rinpoche, inseparable. So let me read the visualization and make some comments as I go through it. So we start with the two seed syllables. We declare the two seed syllables, Hung Hri. That's the unity of skill and means and wisdom. It's the Yab Yom. It's Guru Rinpoche, inseparable from the wisdom Dakini. It's putting the causes of liberation into effect. In the space, page 6a or 13, depending on which text, in the space before me. Where is before you? Who knows? The ultimate and unborn space of absolute reality, in an expanse of ceaseless clouds of five colored rainbow light. Rays of light drift and flow into all directions without coming to rest anywhere. Another way of saying that is they have no place to stand. They have no place where anything can rest. If you think that you'll come to rest when you become enlightened, you'll just be busy with liberating other beings. So there's no rest anywhere in the universe. Nothing rests in the universe. That's fiction. Although it's totally peaceful, there's no rest of any phenomena.